Hello, everyone. My name is Elmer Weens. I'm here back at CITR for today's Geraldo's Hour show after a 3-month hiatus, cooling my jets, replenishing my mojo, and re-energizing my libido. Going to have a lot of fun for the next hour. I'm going to play some great tunes and 3 radio dramas for your listening pleasure. These radio dramas are called Glory Road, Subdued, and Canon in D Major, recorded right here at CITR's UBC Radio Studios. The plays were written, acted, directed, and produced by students from UBC's Creative Writing Program. I'm going to play a track by the band We Were Lovers in just a moment, but first I want to say that CITR Radio is kicking off its fundraising drive today. Lots of ways to donate. Call the station at 604-822-8648 or donate online at www.citr.ca or by dropping off a donation at CITR Studios in UBC's Student Union Building. Okay, let's listen to the tune Jealous Lovers from the band We Were Lovers, Pyramids album. Was nice. You are listening to Geraldo's Hour with Elmer Weens. on CITR Radio at 101.9 FM and CITR.ca on the internet. And now for the first of three radio dramas.
CITR and UBC's Creative Writing Program present the radio drama Glory Road, written by Elmer Weens. The members of the cast are Zach Meeks as the narrator, Anais Basmajian as Margaret, James Paley as Michael, and Rosemary Anderson as Kim. The play was directed by Rosemary Anderson and produced by Elmer Weens.
Everybody loves somebody sometime. Everybody falls in love somehow. Something in your kiss just told me my sometime is now. Everybody finds somebody someplace. There's no telling where love may appear. Something in my heart keeps saying.
Once upon a time, UBC was a much smaller place in terms of the number of students and faculty members. Many students were housed in Army barracks left over from the Second World War at Fort Camp and Acadia Park. Some classes and junior faculty members' offices were also located in these crumbling, moldy, whitewashed Army barracks. These were the days before UBC's administration sold its soul in exchange for large endowments and donations from corporations, governments, and wealthy private individuals. Despite its more modest goals, UBC attracted highly qualified teachers and researchers from around the world. But because of UBC's limited funds and facilities, some faculty members left UBC, got away, as they would say in faculty jargon, to pursue their research and writing elsewhere. And in those days, of course, there were strict rules of conduct governing the relationships between professors and students, and a physical education course was compulsory. So here we are, in an office at UBC, in a converted army barrack, sparsely furnished, with a desk, a bookshelf, two chairs, a wastebasket, and perhaps a blackboard. A working door opens onto a hallway. On the desk are a few stacks of paper, an ashtray, a lamp, and a soup can with pens and pencils. While the white paint on the bare walls of the office is peeling. It's October, 1964. Margaret and Michael sit at either side of the desk. Margaret sits casually, perhaps smoking a cigarette, while Michael nervously jiggles his right foot. Margaret, a young English instructor, has called Michael, a second-year student, into her office. Kim, a first-year student, keeps bursting into their meeting.
You needn't call me doctor. I don't have my PhD yet. I explained that in class. And stop calling me Mrs. or Miss in class.
Yes. What do you have?
I have my master's, and I am working on my PhD at Harvard.
So it is a master's degree. That's enough to be an instructor?
Stop doing that. You do that in class, too. Changing the drift of the conversation towards someone or something else. It is the flow, just like in writing, that I want in these essays.
It's just that you seem very young to be teaching a second-year English class. You're younger than my high school teachers. What's your zodiac sign?
Scorpio. You're doing that again. I need to see your UBC student card.
Why do you need to see that?
Look, I don't have a Michael Bedford on my class list. And yet, Michael, you have written a midterm and handed in this essay. It's a problem.
Will my driver's license do? Here.
Is that all you go with? Now see here, mister. This driver's license is a fake ID. I know because I worked in a bar. And you are not 23 years old. Here. In any case, I checked at the registrar's office. There is no Michael Bedford registered at UBC. So who are you?
Sorry. That's the pseudonym I used when I wrote a column for my high school newspaper. I am registered, but under a different name. Oh, I know. My student card. Let me show you. I'm in math honors, see? My real name is Martin Gage. Here.
It says here that you're a second-year student, and you're 18 years old. You seem younger than your picture. And why just that glimmer of a smile?
It's, because of my parents, that I use my pseudonym at UBC, when I can. Like here in your class. I mean, because I'm already registered for the maximum number of courses. I'm taking 6 math and science courses. I couldn't sign up for any more. Can I persuade you at least?
Well, I'm not here to restrict you, but why take my English literature class?
It's like fate, I guess. Like in Shakespeare's play, Twelfth Night, in which Olivia and Viola consign their future to fate, acting, through time. Yes, fate.
No. I need us to be clear right now. What should I be calling you, Michael? You are taking my class under a pseudonym. As a writer, I am okay with that. My question is more like, why are you taking my English class if math is your forte? Most of us don't understand math. Don't even like math.
Professor!
Kim, who is it this time? Can you come back another time?
The one to whom I am kind is the one who does me most harm.
Just ignore her. She's having issues. So, why are you?
English was one of my best subjects in high school.
And you didn't want to give up that option, right? I mean, it's like a gate to the future, a gate you might want to enter. You talk about gates in your essay here, on A Portrait of the Artist as a Young Man by James Joyce.
Did you like it? How did I do?
See, Michael, that's the thing. What I think about your writing. Let's get back to your assertion of fate. I remember you now. Do you remember me from that ballroom dancing class? The first 2 weeks of September?
What do you mean? I'm taking ballroom dancing for my phys ed elective.
Oh, you're Michael, aren't you? You are fortunate, like a god. Professor, my ears are ringing and I can barely see.
Jim, do you mind? I am with a student. Later.
I met her this spring at the UBC High School Orientation, for high school presidents and student assembly speakers. Sometimes I see her hanging around the mathematics building, although she isn't in any of my classes.
Yeah. Kim is of two minds and two bodies. She's quoting scraps of Sappho, the Greek lesbian poet, at me. About that dance class we were in. I had just arrived from Toronto. I thought I might meet people. Instructors can take courses for free. But everyone seemed so much younger. Did we dance?
I just arrived in Chilliwack. It was all a blur. We had to dance with everyone. I mean with all the girls. The guys danced with the girls. Was it that waltz with Dean Martin? His big hit this summer?
Yes. Yeah. The song was Everybody Loves Somebody Sometime. So, is all this more than just something intellectual? Is it something physical? Is it because I attract you physically?
Like I said, it's fate. Your time slot fit the vacant blank time slot in my schedule. Like you said, it's a gate into the future, actually.
So you are not denying it, the physical aspect, are you?
Where does time go when it vacantly passes? Never again will it come to you. Never again will it come.
I know that quote from Sappho, too. We were talking about your essay. You compare James Joyce's portrait with Robert Heinlein's Glory Road, with a science fiction novel, claiming the Christian apocalypse is science fiction.
Yes. Have you read it? It's about a guy who gets recruited by a beautiful, somewhat older woman who needs to save the Empire of the Universes. She's the queen. They pass through gates to get to different galaxies and universes and fight many battles together.
I honestly wish I were dead. It's what one loves that is the most beautiful.
I have never, Kim, known you to be more annoying. I can get you a transfer to the University of Toronto if you think that would help. I know Jay McPherson. She's an English professor there.
Usually she's hanging around Morginsky's door. The math prof.
Older men and their bodies. You're very keen on science fiction, aren't you? Technically, you're not my student. So what do you say we go out somewhere before Kim returns? We'll talk about your essay and science fiction over a cup of coffee. The Christian apocalypse and dystopian futures really fascinate me. Call me Margaret.
In your arms, everybody loves somebody sometimes. And although my dream was overdue, your love made it well worth waiting for someone.
You have been listening to the radio drama, Glory Road, written by Elmer Weens. The members of the cast were Zach Meeks as narrator, Anais Basmajian as Margaret, James Paley as Michael, and Rosemary Anderson as Kim. The play was directed by Rosemary Anderson and produced by Elmer Weens. The play was produced in cooperation with CITR and UBC's Creative Writing Program.
Yeah, that was 1964. I think I know who Margaret and Kim actually were. So what else was going on back in 1964? Bob Dylan had a great hit, All I Really Want to Do, a hit that was covered by many artists in later years, including Cher.
I ain't looking to compete with you, beat or cheat or mistreat you, simplify you, classify you, deny, defy or crucify you. All I really wanna do is baby be friends with you. Knowing I ain't looking to fight with you, frighten you or uptighten you, drag you down or drain you down, chain you down or bring you down. All I really wanna do is baby be friends with you. I ain't looking looking to block you up, shock or knock or lock you up. Analyze you, categorize you, finalize you, or advertise you. All I really wanna do is, baby, be friends with you. Straight face you, race or chase you, track or trace you, or disgrace you, or displace you, or define you, or confine you. All I really wanna do is, baby, be friends with you. Your kin, make you spin or do you in, or select you or dissect you or inspect you or reject you. All I really wanna do is, baby, be friends with you. Take or shake or forsake you out. I ain't looking for you to feel like me, see like me, or be like me. All I really wanna do is, baby, be friends with you.
AMS Food Bank. Your access to money during the studies at UBC will most likely be limited, but it is a priority of the AMS Food Bank to ensure your access to food is not. The AMS Food Bank provides emergency food relief 7 days a week for all UBC students. To volunteer with the Food Bank or for inquiries about how to take advantage of the services provided, contact them at foodbank@ams.ubc.ca. For more information, find the AMS Food Bank on Facebook or feel free to visit anytime across from the Wellness Center and Sprouts.
This is CITR Radio, 101.9 FM and CITR.ca on the web. And now from Kenya, it is Sauté Soul and Coming Home.
Safari, safari nani ambali. Ukiwaza kunimisi madam, tabasam kidogo. And every stage and every song I play, every fan that will scream my name, I will always be with you in my heart. I will miss you forever. My days are long, my nights are cold. On my mind all the time. I miss you, Mpenzi. I miss you, my chérie. Even with all the girls
always know I love you, baby, my one and only.
My days are long,
Elmer Weens here on Geraldo's Hour at CITR 101.9 FM Radio.
Today, for your listening pleasure, we bring you Subdued, a radio drama written by Joy Rishu. Subdued is set in a railway station in Brighton, England, 1962. Nine-year-old Daisy quietly defies her mother, Lady Black, when she chooses to befriend Debris, a little girl who lives in the railway station.
Mama's busy.
But Mama, who's that?
I've got no idea. Now, if you'd be a nice little girl and help Mama with this umbrella. Daisy. Daisy. Daisy, what did I tell you about wandering off on your own in this part of the railway station?
Mama, that hurts!
What did you think you were doing? Didn't I tell you? Oh, God. Stay close to me.
What is it, Mama?
A rail rat. There, hiding behind that corner. Officer!
Mama, who is she? She looks sad.
They all are. It's the plague of the rail rats. Black skin, tattered clothes, tattered moods. The whole package. Now, stop staring at it. Officer!
But she looks just like me, Mama. She She's beautiful.
I beg your pardon. Do you have tattered clothes?
No.
Is your skin dark, burnt, and unpleasant?
No.
And are your legs thin and bare, your hair thick and untamed?
No.
Are you void of any physical signs of civilization?
No.
Yet you say you see a resemblance. Daisy, you need a father in your life. Look at the child you're becoming. Where is that gun, officer? Officer! Officer! Officer, there's a rat in the station. My security feels compromised. I've got my little girl with me, too. Do something!
Rail rat! Get down to there immediately!
Is it deaf? It's still seated there. Rail rat, grab!
Don't make me come after you!
By the railway tracks. Did you see me? I was with Mama. You're awfully quiet. Is something the matter? What's your name? My name's Daisy. I'm 9 years old. I just turned 9 last week. Here, I'll share my Caramac with you. Mama just bought it for me before we left for Ashford. I saved it all this way. Here. It's still good. I promise. Look. I'll take a bite. It's good. Here. Do you like it? It's my favorite.
It's wonderful.
You can have it all. If you'd like.
Thank you.
Mama would kill me if she found out I was here.
Oh, I wouldn't want to get you into any trouble. But thank you for the chocolate.
Okay. Is your skin really burnt?
Burnt? You're funny. You really shouldn't be here.
Why not? I'm 9 years old. You're here. Why can't I be? How old are you?
9.
See? Fair. You've got no right to chase me away. Well, at least until it's time for the next train to leave. That's hoping Mama doesn't catch us. You know, I really want to be your friend. We could have a secret friendship.
But if the officer finds us? This isn't a good idea.
Well, that silly officer. Such a silly, silly man. Next time he comes around here, I'll fight him. Well, okay. Maybe not. I'll scream really loudly.
Yeah, that ought to do it. Well, okay. A secret friendship.
Yes. What's your name?
Sorry. My name is Debris.
Debris? What a wonderful name. Mama said...
that I was a rail rat?
Yes. Why do they call you that? Sorry. I didn't mean to upset you. We can change the topic. What were you drawing? On the wall, when I came?
Just pictures.
Pictures? What sort of pictures?
I don't know. Just the sort that comes to my head.
Could I see?
Okay, come. Here, you can fill the wall if you'd like.
Whoa, what is it?
A picture. Here. I ran away. myself here, in this alley, in this railway station. That's why I do feet here, little chicken feet. Why did she run away? He made me run away.
Who?
The master. He did horrible things to me. Things I didn't understand. Things I didn't like.
What things?
I'd rather not say. I hate him.
Could I draw two?
Sure. Is that a man? Who is he?
That's my father. Papa. He left us. 3 years ago. For a lady that looked just like you, actually. Very pretty, but very dark. Mama cried for days, and we never saw him again.
Is that why your mom said all those mean things about me? Is it because I look like the lady?
Well, I don't know. Mama says all sorts of crazy things.
I'm sorry, though. About your dad.
It's okay. Thanks.
Hey, Daisy. Do you hear that?
Hear what? Mama, she's coming.
Daisy!
She'll kill me.
Daisy!
Oh, God.
Oh, Lord. Officer, help us. Oh, God. Officer, the real rat. It has my daughter. Officer!
But, Mama, she's...
Daisy, it's okay. Mama is here now. It's okay. Come. Mama is here. Officer!
Mama, she's my friend. We weren't doing anything bad. I promise. Take my hand. See, Mama? She's my friend. Her name is...
I'm about to faint. Oh, God, hold me. Officer! Officer, help us. She's bewitched my daughter. Oh, Heavenly Father, what are these demons set
before? Mama, what are you saying? Mama, you're going to get her in trouble. Mama, please.
Here.
For the love of God, do something!
But Mama, please, she's my friend.
Daisy Mason Black, if you don't get away from that thing right this second...
Mama, please!
What did I tell you about hanging around this railway station? What did I tell you?
It's what they deserve, Daisy. All of them. Keep close to Mama now.
First, you steal our food. Then, you steal our alleys, our wool. Now, you steal our children.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? Hear that, boys? Ha! The rail rat is sorry.
Rail rats don't know what it means to be sorry.
I'll show you sorry.
Shit, man. She's a kid. Take it easy, Jack.
Take it easy? You want me to take it easy?
She gets the point, man. She's a kid, Jerry. Take it easy.
Saw it off.
Mama? Mama, what's going on? Mama? Mama, her head is bleeding.
I've had enough. Let's go.
Mama! Mama, no! Debris! 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 No!
Shit, man. She's dead.
Eyes of a child, run free and wide. Usiogope, atakulinda. child, run free and wild. Usiogope, atakulinda.
You've been listening to Subdued. The part of Lady Black was played by Mimi Milton. Daisy was played by Imogen Murray. Debris by Nadine Clark. The first police officer by Zachary Meeks. Second police officer by Dylan Jones. Other police officers, Chen Chen Wang and Glenn Nelson. Subdued was written by Joy Rishu and produced and directed by Rosemary Anderson at the University of British Columbia. This program was made possible by the UBC Creative Writing Program in cooperation with CITR Radio. I'm Dylan Jones. Thanks for listening.
Vegetables, I'm gonna chow down my vegetables. I love you most of all, my favorite vegetable.
Sprouts, it's your 75-cent coffee fix in the sub.
It's your source for reasonably priced, creatively named stew and vegan brownies.
It's your purveyor of bicycle-delivered local produce.
It's also a place where volunteers can realize their vision of responsible business and where like-minded students can explore UBC's food systems.
Hark! Sprouts is currently accepting applications for next year's executive board and is encouraging ambitious, creative, and disciplined students from all faculties and year levels to apply.
Come by Sprouts in the sub-basement to learn more about our projects and how to get involved.
I tried to kick the ball, but my tinny flew right out. I'm red as a beet, 'cause I'm so embarrassed.
Just to cheer things up, let's listen to some dance and house music by Ryan Hemsworth. Small and Lost from his Guilt Trips album.
Thank you.
CITR presents the radio drama Canon in D Major, written by Elmer Weens, with Rosemary Anderson as Beverly and Elmer Weens as Edwin.
I like to listen to classical music between sessions with my clients. Tell me, Edwin, have you been to a psychologist before?
Not professionally. I mean, I've known psychologists. Nancy, I lived with her some years back. She used to play that same piece by Pachelbel, Canon in D Major, whenever we were having sex.
Your doctor said you were having crying jags, the one who referred you. She said you think your wife, Jennifer, was having an affair and that you were very angry about it.
Yes. I found a bunch of text messages on her cell phone from some guy called Mike. On Jennifer's cell phone. Not on Nancy's, I mean. Your music has me a bit on edge. That was a long time ago. Nancy, I mean.
Let's focus on Jennifer, your wife. Were the text messages sexually explicit?
Not exactly. There were so many of them. Short comments, like baby, and the names of places like Whistler, and I think dates, like months. Places she'd been to then.
That doesn't seem very sexual. How is it you were checking on her text messages?
We were all at the pool. I went to the kitchen to get a drink. Her cell phone was plugged in, getting charged. It was vibrating on the counter, so I picked it up, and curious, I looked at it. Then I found all the other messages from Mike. I've never looked at her phone before. So then I wrote down Mike's phone number from her directory, and then I went outside and said in a loud voice, there is a text message there from Mike. Jennifer's sister, Anne, and Anne's husband and kids were also there. Where was I? It was Sunday afternoon. Our neighbor, the guy next door, we live in an apartment block, was there too. This is where it gets hairy. That music always makes me think of Nancy. Nancy?
Are you calling me Nancy? It's Beverly. The music. You told everyone at the pool that Mike left text messages for Jennifer.
Right. So right away, Jennifer ran off to the apartment. Stan, Anne's husband, and the girls were playing around in the pool. Anne gave me a funny look then. Barry, the guy next door, was suntanning, lying on a lounge chair. This was in June, 4 months ago.
How did Jennifer explain the text messages? Did she deny she was having an affair?
Not exactly. She told me that evening that she and Mike had been engaged after high school, and that he wanted to get to know her again after they reconnected at their high school reunion last year. I didn't go back to Ontario with her for that. Anne, Jennifer's sister, wouldn't tell me anything about Mike. But Jennifer didn't know that, although Anne never seems to say anything about that. That was the first time I heard Jennifer had been engaged then. Everyone else must have known about it then, like everyone in her family.
I'm hearing a lot of that's and then's in what you're saying. How does Jennifer's sister have anything to do with her having an affair? Can you focus?
That's Jennifer now. She said she would join us here. I always hear her bell before she arrives home after work. She rides her bike to and from work and rings it outside in the back lane when she gets home.
A bell? I don't have your wife scheduled today. What else did you do after Jennifer told you about Mike?
Right, and this is the part that involves my neighbor, Barry. I used the internet to check on the numbers, and when I called the text message number, I got Mike's work voicemail at the Ontario Provincial Police. He's a detachment commander there. And a few months after I'd told them all at the pool that an OPP detachment commander was texting Jennifer, Barry was arrested at the scene of a gangland slaying with a gun and cocaine in his possession.
Let me get all this straight. I need to know what you are saying. You told all of them that Sunday at the pool that Mike was an OPP detachment commander, including Barry. And later, Barry, your neighbor, was arrested as a gangster at a murder scene.
Right. That's the music again. Are you doing that, or is it coming from next door someplace? Do you know Nancy? Were they using our apartment to bug Barry? I mean the OPP. That's why the thing with Barry is weird. And what's with that music? That's Jennifer coming down the hall. I hear that every evening when she comes home. She can verify all this.
I'm not hearing any footsteps. Are you hearing things, Edwin? I don't know who you mean by Nancy. And who do you think is bugging your neighbor? I thought this session was about you and the affair you think your wife is having. If this has something to do with gangsters and violence, I have to contact the police. I have to get this. These documents need my urgent attention. Go on, Edwin. I'll just peruse this. Just a sec. Weird.
Are they from the police? I thought I saw a uniform. I was sure it was Jennifer. Is she in the waiting room? Is that from the OPP? Is Mike going to lose his job? He was using police equipment to facilitate an affair with my wife. Is Jennifer still mad because I called her boss at the hospital about the affair? Jennifer said the text messages I saw weren't even from Mike, but from some other OPP guys who wanted to know who Mike was calling. Why is the OPP investigating gangsters here in B.C.? Did they know that we were living next door to a gangster? Why didn't the Vancouver police or RCMP tell us about it? She said they wanted to know what their boss was doing. Barry always seemed like a good guy. I thought he was always going out late at night because he worked in a restaurant. Susan, the woman he lived with, was nice too, except I wondered about her and her friends because of all the tattoos. I thought they were just trying to look tough. For a while there, it seemed like Jennifer wanted me to befriend them because she says I'm not congenial enough. That's what happened with Nancy. I was too congenial with other women. That's why we broke up. We were never married, Nancy and I, and technically we didn't live together because we maintained separate apartments, although we were together constantly. I was married before, though. That was with Dorothy during my 20s. But I didn't break up with Dorothy because of Nancy. This was because of Penny and Carrie and Sherry. This is starting to sound a bit crazy, but it was spread over quite a while. Dorothy and I were married for 5 years. After we separated, I was essentially single for 7 years. I lived in a number of cities because of my work. That's why I was always hooking up with women and breaking up with them. Sometimes I get nauseous thinking about them all.
Edwin, I'm going to have to stop you there. You're rambling. You're here to talk about your feelings about yourself and Jennifer. These papers I've just received are from Jennifer's doctor. She faxed them to me. Jennifer told her that she told you what she did, that she was up in Whistler with Mike last August and this May when she was organizing volunteers for the Winter Olympics. She wants you to be okay. Are you maybe bringing in your neighbor and his problems with the police and Nancy just in order to avoid dealing with Mike and Jennifer?
I don't know why I'm talking about that now. It seems to me the thing with my neighbor can't be a coincidence. And now when I think of Nancy and how I screwed up there, I get depressed. I don't want to go through all that again. But maybe I will have to like them. although this is starting to seem more like what happened to my first wife, Dorothy and me, and I don't want that.
You just confirmed that you're depressed. That's a start. You also seem rather angry. Angry and depressed.
Because isn't that normal?
Our time's up, Edwin. I have another client coming in now. You need some medication for your depression. I'm going to recommend to your doctor that you have a referral to a psychiatrist, confirming her own assessment of you.
You have been listening to the radio drama Canon in D Major, written by Elmer Weems. The part of Beverly was played by Rosemary Anderson. Edwin was played by Elmer Weems.
I hope you enjoyed listening to our three radio plays and tunes today. CITR Radio is about to kick off its fundraising drive. Lots of ways to donate. Call the station at 604-822-8648 or donate online at citr.ca or by dropping off a donation at CITR Studios in UBC's Student Union Building. And let's conclude the show with Under the Wire by the band Running Red Lights.
I thought my heart had seen its last days. I gave up on giving it away, 'cause I was walking down a jilted lover's road, and there was no turning back, so I was told. There was no turning back, so I was told. Once a grip of hurt, it had its hold. Those cold, ship girl stones, it crushed my heart and chilled my bones. It was burnt ash, just black as coal. And my broken high heel trampled so. So there you were, like a river, baby, you know. You carried all my blues away, and I'll hold your love. Came in under the wire. Well, I was waiting on that goodbye train. Umbrella up, you fought the rain. You ushered me out of the cold.
I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. I like to move it, move it. You like to
move it.
I like to move it. Move it.